Music by George Frideric Handel from Judas Maccabeus, the Hail the Conquering Hero, and a chorus. And that was the Dallas Symphony Brass. I'm Judy Wagley, about 7 minutes after 1 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon. Thanks for joining me for Afternoon Classical Music. And speaking of conquering heroes, my guest in the studio today is Dr. Eric Tucker, professor of voice and opera at Central Michigan University. Nice to have you here today.
That's an introduction. I don't get that often. Good to be here.
I played that just for you.
Oh, wow.
And I must let you know, and I think you'll be happy to hear this too, that today we are sharing our classical music in honor of the late Vea Chemichian.
Absolutely. Vea was a darling of this town, a huge champion. The School of Music, she loved Stargazer. She and I both shared that, and we both sent each other Stargazer. She would usually send them to me after the opera productions.
Stargazer Lilies?
Stargazer Lilies. Not a sweeter soul than Vea Chemichian.
Oh, nice. Well,
truly.
I'm happy to do that today, sharing our classical music in her honor.
Absolutely. Wonderful.
Dr. Tucker, big weekend coming up for you.
Absolutely.
The Central Michigan University Opera Theater presents Sweeney Todd.
Yes, pretty much put on by the School of Music. It's a huge deal and a huge undertaking, with the performances opening on this coming Friday, Saturday, and then a Sunday matinee.
Friday and Saturday at 7:30.
Correct.
Sunday at 2.
Yes.
At the Staples Family Concert Hall.
Mm-hmm. Yes. In the School of Music over on campus.
Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. Tell us a little bit about the story.
Well, the story is, it's one of those, first off, it was written by the genius Sondheim, who wrote everything from the lyrics to the music, and he's a genius. It's a dark story, it's a comedy, but it's a dark comedy about basically a guy who is shipped off to prison, or to a penal colony, actually, in order that the judge in town can have his way with his wife, and so he gets shipped off, the judge has the way with the wife goes crazy, and then the judge decides to go ahead and raise his daughter so he can put his mark on her sometime later in life when she gets older. And Sweeney escapes, gets back, and then sets out to take revenge on the judge. And his profession before going was that he was an expertly skilled barber. So when he comes back, he opens up another shop, barber shop, and then we use that razor, and he starts nixing off the folks in the show. And there's also Mrs. Lovett, who is running a buy shop. So now basically, of course, the gruesome part of this, but yet you got to kind of think, okay, this is funny, is that the bodies that he's hacking up, they're going down in the oven, they're getting sliced into meat pies because her meat pie business was doing horribly before we started putting bodies into pies. So the whole meat pie analogy, and once again, you got to come in with a sense of humor. I don't know, maybe a beer and a half wouldn't be a bad idea either.
And if you go out for dinner after the show, opt for the vegetarian plate.
Yes, do not do the empanadas. Find something else to eat.
Yeah, that is kind of a dark story. Family friendly?
It is family friendly, but I think as with most things, when you go to the theater, there's going to be some explaining if you take your 5 or 6 year old. There's not much coarse language, but the show itself is kind of dark, and you got to kind of explain to your child that while we're making fun of somebody, while we're laughing at the fact that somebody is getting razored and getting slit and put into pies. It's not exactly a Disney show.
Many people might think of Sweeney Todd as a Broadway show.
And clearly it is. It was originally, I think it was premiered in 79, and premiered as a show on Broadway. However, something that I find very interesting about this, the general director of the Metropolitan Opera at the time was there for the opening. And in an interview that followed very, very shortly afterwards, he said, don't kid yourself, this is not necessarily a musical theater. This is just as much an American opera as it is a musical theater. I think I would go along with that because there is a little bit of dialogue, but not, this is mostly music all the time. And of course, as I said earlier, Sondheim is a genius in the way he writes, and they're extremely high, as with opera, there are extremely high pitches and low pitches and loud and soft. And so it really requires professionally trained and skilled voices to sing this show. This is not Oklahoma by any stretch of the imagination, and not implying that doesn't require skill, but as far as like the darkness of the humor and also the writing, it's very far, very far advanced. It's a wonderful show.
You mentioned that this production is by the School of Music.
Yes.
Who else is involved?
I've been really blessed to have a wonderful team. I mean, one of the real difficulties about pulling off opera in Staples is that it's really a beautiful concert hall with a $3 million organ sitting at the front of it. And there's no fly space. So you got to make things happen, and you got to get the audience on your side, for what they will be able to believe. So,
because it's not a theater,
right? Because it's not a theater per se at all. It's a hall. It's a recital hall, and so I've been really blessed with great help. Dan Kofed is my lighting designer, and he can do damn near anything with lights to make you feel that you're someplace differently than a hall. We also have done some capital investments into that, as far as installing a black marley floor, so you don't see the beautiful oak stage. You actually see something that looks more theater-esque. We have a huge sight curtain, so you don't necessarily see the organ pipes. We've experimented with bringing the ceiling down, the clouds, on the stage, so it kind of compacts it. And then we do all of our set business. And with the lighting that Dan does, it's just extraordinary. Of course, a huge chorus in this. And my new colleague that I'm just as thrilled as punch with is Eamon Eady. And when I first pitched the notion about doing this show, I said, do you think concert choir could help us out? And he said, absolutely. And I said, well, and would you conduct it? And he said, absolutely. And I said, okay, and can you get together the pit and the orchestra? And he said, absolutely. And so, and he's just doing brilliant work down there. Also, somebody who has really been my right arm the entire time I've been doing these shows for the past 16 years is Dr. Mary Jo Cox. And she's not in the company. She's an extraordinary pianist. And she plays for us, and she sits there and plays those blocking rehearsals that have got to just be boring her half out of her mind. But she is brilliant and tolerant and extraordinary to work with. So I don't really feel disadvantaged at all. Quite frankly, I always look at a really tough situation and say, okay, this is called a challenge. How are we going to make this happen? And when I was interviewed for the job here, so many years ago, Dr. Andy Lamadou, who is the director of the School of Music, he asked me, he said, okay, we'd really like to get opera going here on a regular basis. And he said, but you have to kind of fit within the constraints of the School of Music, because obviously, you know, we have all other kinds of ensembles and things going on in the building, and opera couldn't just become the big thing. And I told him, I said, you know, if you tell me that my operas have to be out in the parking lot from the hours of 2 to 5 on a Tuesday afternoon, and all I can use is sheets and some poles, you just tell me that, and that's what I'll set out to do. So, and I've received great support through the School of Music through doing all this.
Well, as an opera director, well, as an audience member, we go to the show, mm-hmm. we see the actors, the singers, the musicians, the costumes, the lighting, and it's just magic.
Mm-hmm.
But as a director, when you have to put together a production like that, where do you start?
Well, I mean, for me, the first thing is I have to think, okay, do I have the ponies to pull this cart? So I've got to know that I have the singers to do this. If I know that I have the singers to do this, and I've always been always about the students, and if I know that I've got singers who want to sing this, and they're willing to work, and they're willing to make happen, I'll do whatever it takes. So that's been 15-hour days past 4 days, and then after everybody goes home, then I paint the set by myself. And I'm okay with that. As long as I know that I'm making a difference with students who really want this. So the first thing, I figure out if I've got the ponies to pull the buggy. Then after I've got the students, I say, hey, Dan, Kofed, is this something you're interested in? Can you light this? I ask Mary Jo, you up for another year? She says yes. Then I start going about securing rights, whether it's something a little bit more contemporary or just getting the scores. In the every other year, we have the University Symphony does this collaboratively. Every other year, it's kind of like fend for yourself, which is what Dr. Eady has been doing, and has assembled a brilliant team down there in the pit. And so then we go looking into parts, looking into scores. If I'm doing something with the orchestra, it has to be something that is also a good fit for the orchestra. The hall is always pretty much reserved about this time, which is the week following spring break. So I have spring break to get in the hall, because as busy as that recital hall is, you know, you can't just like put up an opera in 20 minutes and say, let's roll. So I always have the kids come back early for spring break. Once again, students who are committed, they come back. I own them on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. and then Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, open on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, tear it down, be done. So it is not just me. It's everybody else who is willing to play ball, but it is exclusively done for those students who really want to go out and make their mark in this profession.
How many are involved in Sweeney Todd?
Well, I probably have at least 60 in the chorus. I think I have 20 in the pit, and I think I have a double cast of about 12 characters, 24. So we're looking right around almost 100 folks.
Double cast.
Mm-hmm.
So each cast is going to be slightly different. How
yes.
do you do a double cast?
Well,
how do you rehearse that?
Well, a double cast, I mean, many directors just really abhor the whole notion because it is very difficult. And you do have so many different entities, and you will invariably you will have some in a cast that are stronger, some that are weaker, right? But as an educational institution, and for kids who are paying a whole lot of money to go here, I think it is imperative that we make as many opportunities as we can. So, for instance, what I love about double casting is that, you know, the very first rehearsal of any production is always the most difficult because, you know, you got 18-year-old kids mixed in with some 23s, you know, whatever, and you're doing something that's very vulnerable because, you know, looking like a fool is very vulnerable. And so when you start the process, you start working with these kids, whether it's their singing, which of course is so private and personal to them, or their acting, everybody's kind of nervous about how they're going to look. Self-conscious, we're all that way, right? So anyhow, what happens is it's usually that first person who's willing to just go out there and throw it out there and be just as silly or as intense or whatever. Then the rest of the cast goes, now, wait a minute. If Bob's going to do that, I think I'm going to do that. And so then, as we've been going through the process in the double cast, you will see people who are like, they're finding different ways to do things, in ways to distinguish themselves from their colleague, but then also bright enough to figure out when something really works, and they'll do that. And so what happens, I mean, it just takes the whole level of the show, just soars with it, because it's just so crazy different when everybody's out there to do their best. And the thing I like so much, but this comes from good kids and mature kids, is that I don't hear this, you know, back and forth and you know, bickering about, well, I don't like the way he did it, and well, I like my way better. They're out there, they're so supportive of each other. And of course, the cast who is not on stage is in the audience while they're watching their colleagues. And they laugh the hardest and they clap the loudest for their colleagues. And that, once again, that comes back to putting your money on winning horses in the first place.
I was going to say, you've got some racehorses
yes,
there for sure. Some
absolutely.
Thoroughbreds.
Absolutely.
Speaking of thoroughbreds, so you mentioned this is all about the students.
Absolutely.
And the experience that they're getting mm-hmm. doing something like this, you know, how many over the years have you been able to say, we knew them when, from CMU?
Well, we don't have to look very far back for that at all. I mean, a couple, if I may indulge for just a couple minutes, a couple incredible successes. You ask about the whole notion of double casting. Well, another reason why double casting is really slick is because sometimes people get ill, sometimes things happen, and then you're stuck without a show, or you're running around trying to fly somebody in to work with people they've never worked with. So in this double cast, I have two Sweeney Todds. I have Dylan Goyke, who's a brilliant singer and actor, a senior here, and Brandon Chu, who is a brilliant singer and actor, who is in his junior year. Well, this past spring, in May, I took four students to New York with me, who I thought were really pretty talented. Dylan and Brandon were among those. And I took them to work with the people with whom I work in New York, some of my coaches, stage directors. And for about 2 days, they brought in a choreographer from Broadway to put them on a dance call. They really kind of gave them the once-over about to show them their level of preparation where it stood at that time. And so one of my friends was like, you know, this Brandon Chu guy, he's a good-looking boy, and they're doing King and I right now. They're doing the national tour of that. It might be a good idea just to allow us to take a video with him singing one of the King and I licks. So I went and I played. We sang. We made a video. They turned it in. That was in May. And that was it. We heard nothing. Rewind to about maybe, it's not even been a month ago, Brandon texted me one night and said, you're never going to believe this, Dr. Tucker, but those people from the King and I have contacted me, and they want me to come to New York and audition for the national tour.
Oh.
And he said, but since I'm doing this show right now, I'm doing Sweeney Todd, what do you think? And I said, what you? Until we have a problem, we don't have a problem. Get your ass to New York. You need to do this, right? So he did, and lo and behold, 5 or 6 days later, they called him up, they made him the offer, and Brandon is on his way to Ottawa right now to open in King and I Tonight in Ottawa, just finishing Indianapolis the past couple of days.
I just got goosebumps.
Yeah. That's just an incredible story. But I told you, I took four folks to New York last spring. Well, one of the gals who went, Megan Johns, she is doing the national tour right now of Cat in the Hat. Nate Hackman is doing one of the leading roles in the national tour of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And Dylan Goyke, the other student who is currently singing Sweeney Todd, he's just signed a long contract for the Forestburg Playhouse in the Catskills. So, I mean, this is just fantastic news. I'm so proud of my students.
Oh, yes, you must be so proud.
As I told you, these are the kids who said, yes, I want to do this, and they've worked hard. And that's what happens. When you put passion with some brains and some hard work, you never know what you're liable to get.
And you must be so proud, and the entire School of Music and the university and all of us are
absolutely proud
of these young people. Wow.
Absolutely, as they should be. I mean, it's funny with this Sweeney Todd. You know, I mentioned Nate Hackman is the guy who's doing Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. He has had a major career nationally and internationally in musical theater, the BBC Proms, Valjean at the Imperial Theater on Broadway, and many, many, many tours and stuff like that. Well, anyhow, when he was a student here, he kept trying to talk me into doing Sweeney Todd, you know. And the storyline, it's kind of dark. Ugh, gosh, I just want to fool with it. And so, now that I've matured a little, I said I'd been here 16 years. After maturing a little bit, I've picked up this show and I was like, oh my God, this is pretty extraordinary. And in the shows that I've done here, I didn't do the operas the past 2 years because I was doing some administrative work. So Mikado and Die Fledermaus, those were done by my colleagues. But I've done 14 shows here, and there are two that stick out to mind that I would say are extraordinary. And one was Don Giovanni, and now is this show. I got the rehearsal last night. I was like, I truly do not deserve to be getting a show out this like this with this good with my name on it. I really think it's extraordinary, and that's not mea culpa. That's what I really think.
Wow.
Brilliant kids.
Yes, yes. Well, I've been, I'm sort of new here, and I've been so impressed with everything I've seen at the School of Music. Not only the performances, but just how the young people are just so nice and dedicated.
We have good kids. Mm-hmm. We have good kids, polite, kind kids. As I say, they're back there just roaring on for their colleagues. But they're doing brilliant work. I mean, and it shows. We have three performances, and tickets are selling so well that I think we may have 50 or 70 seats left to sell. That's about it, which is unheard of for a hall that size, 500-600 people, three nights a week. So, it is an extraordinary show, and these people are doing an extraordinary job. I've said extraordinary probably 156 times. I'll find another word, but I do mean it.
Well, as I mentioned before, as an audience member, you see all of this, magic happening on stage, and then to, dial it back for a second and think about all of the work and the rehearsals and the practicing, and the young people that are on stage, not only have they done that, they're keeping up their academic studies too.
Absolutely, and one of the things that I really insist with these students, sometimes in a rehearsal process, the rehearsal process might be like a month and a half, and they'll rehearse you, like 5 hours a night, and they make everybody be there all the time. I don't do that, because I realize these kids have a life. They also have other classes, and their biology and their English professors expect just as much out of them as I do.
Right.
So I insist that they learn this music on their own, which is why I usually assign the roles in the preceding summer. So they know what they're singing. They get this stuff learned. And then I only rehearse with them 6 hours a week. Three days a week, 2 hours. That's it. And then I own them when they get back from spring break. But, once again, that speaks to the dedication and the work ethic of the cast. They're hungry for this stuff. And success only breeds success.
Oh, that's so exciting. Yep. I'm just getting goosebumps just listening to you and just imagining all of this happening on stage. Because, again, with the musicians and the singers and the actors and the lights and the costumes and the set, mm-hmm. and it's going to be great.
It really is. I cannot speak any more highly of this show. Yeah, it's an A-flat production.
You know? How do you choose a show? And is it your choice, or do you get together with your colleagues?
Well, fortunately, I have been given a pretty even rein on that to say, I think I want to do this show. And the main consideration, as far as my colleagues, is if I'm going to be the conductor and say, do we have the ponies to pull this down in the pit as well?
Mm-hmm.
So I look into that. I think a little bit about what is going to be popular, you know, what people are going to like. But I also, once again, because I think it's more about the students, I think about what is going to be most profitable to them in their learning experience, because that's where it all comes down. If we've, for instance, a show that we need to be doing fairly soon, we need to be getting into some Mozart, because kids have to learn how to sing secco recitativo. They got to learn how to do that. And so, an accompagnato, they've got to learn that skill. It's difficult, but they have to learn that, because if we're turning out what we're calling professional singers, very few people in this world anymore are that amazing in one genre of music that they get to go out, pay their mortgage, put braces on their kids' teeth, only singing Broadway. They're going to have a church job in New York City. They better be able to sing something from Messiah. They're going to hustle to make money as a professional singer. And as I've always said, whenever you're playing in a symphony orchestra and you're playing the clarinet, when the librarian passes out the music, you're going to play whatever's passed out to you. There could be some Cole Porter, some Gershwin, and some Mahler, and you're supposed to be a professional musician and pull it off. So these singers have to be the same way.
Right.
We can't have one-trick ponies, because those days are really kind of pretty much gone.
So it may be Sondheim this year, Mozart next year, Puccini the following year.
That's how it should be. Mm-hmm. It should be, and we should be training singers in such a fashion that they can handle that.
That makes a lot of sense.
I mean, this. Let's face it, you know, I tell people all the time, we don't give people veterinary degrees and not expect them to be able to go out and operate on a horse. So the same with a music degree. We should not be passing out performance degrees that we don't full well expect a kid to be able to go out and make a living as a performer. Otherwise, they spend a lot of money in the wrong place.
So it's important to know that not only is the School of Music providing wonderful entertainment to anybody who wants to come to any of the programs, mm-hmm. recitals, operas, concerts. But it's just a wonderful training ground for all of the students to not only be involved in all of these different experiences, but to feel that energy back from the audience, too.
I kind of thought that was the whole point of a university.
That's the
a learning institution. That's what we're supposed
right.
to be doing. Absolutely.
And while we're at it, let's entertain some folks, too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That sounds like a plan.
Yeah, that is the whole, you get to check out the fruits of their labor. You know, and these audience then they start to know these kids. You know, they
yes.
recognize them from prior productions, you know, and they get to travel. You know, it's Mount Pleasant is an extraordinary, once again, okay, it's a fantastic environment. In which all that gets to happen. It's a very special dynamic here.
Yes, I figured that out right away. It was just obvious to me right away.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
it's a very supportive, nurturing place for all of these students. And they're lucky to be here, and we're real lucky to be able to work with them. That is a privilege.
Well, and thank you for all you do.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. I mean, I can't imagine. This is what I'd do if I worked in a bank or if I had a factory job. I'd go do that. And as soon as I got home, I'd get something to eat, get changed, come in here and do this. I'd work with singers. That's what I'd do.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a hobby, I'm one of those people who is really, really blessed to be able to make a livelihood off of passion.
Well, and you obviously work with them very, very well. So thank you.
Thank you.
for doing that for the students and for everyone.
Oh, thank you, Judy.
For the world.
That's very, very
you know,
kind.
You're sending talented young people out there into the world and, you know, just providing, you know, that they could offer their gifts.
Yeah, and hopefully they're living their passion and they're able to pay their bills on their passion.
It's so important. It's so important. There are too many other things going on in the world that, you know, occupy our thoughts.
The more beauty we can stick in the world, the better it is.
Absolutely.
Whether it's visual, oral, or whatever. Hello, isn't that the whole point of the arts in the first place?
Yeah. That's what we're so thank you so much. Again, the particulars on Sweeney Todd.
So it will be opens this Friday night and then a Friday night at 7:30, a Saturday night at 7:30 and a Sunday at 2 o'clock. And something that is very different this year, instead of just having general seating, so just show up at, 6:30 and grab a great seat, we do have advanced seating this time. And tickets have been selling very, very well. As I said, there may be 10, 15 good seats left on Friday, maybe 10 on Thursday, or Saturday, rather, and then maybe 50 on Sunday. Mm-hmm. But that's about it.
How do we get tickets?
Tickets are online from the Ticketmaster outlet that we have here on CMU. If you do a search on the internet for CMU Sweeney Todd, it's going to pull up the School of Music website, and right there is going to be the link that you click on to get the tickets. And you'll get to choose your seat from the map on the computer.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you so much for coming in and telling us all about that and for being so inspiring.
Judy, I cannot thank you enough. This is how the radio station and the university work best together, when it's hand in hand.
You're welcome anytime.
Thank you very much.
And on that note, I have from last, I believe the concert was in October.
It was.
A performance by the choirs,
Choirs.
This is Concert Choir performing the prologue from Sweeney Todd.
That you will hear this weekend.
Yes, whose skin was pale and his eye was odd.
Was odd.
And here it is.
Thank you.
So much.